Hello everyone, I'm Colin Ellis, and for 30 years I was a permanent employee of other people's cultures. What I wanted to know more than anything else during that time was how to build a great culture myself. And so I wrote a book called Culture Fix, which is the world's first how-to guide for building great workplace culture. And in this, the Culture Makers podcast, I get industry leaders from around the world to expand on the ideas that I wrote about in the book and get them to share actionable things that you can do to create a great place to work yourself. And remember, listening is good, but action is better. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Culture Makers podcast. Today, I'm joined by Claire Brown. Claire is the Senior Regional Vice President at Salesforce based in the UK. She is a committed sales leader with extensive experience of achieving success in tough market conditions, and she's proactive with leadership, communication, and virtual teaming skills, and is able to build strong relationships with customers and business partners. She is also from the same village that I grew up in, which so we should probably talk about that first, back in the UK, which is a village called Rainhill. Hello, Claire.
Morning. How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you. So you, and you're still in Rainhill?
I am, yeah. I did move away for 4 or 5 years, but then when I had my children, I moved back home for being nearer to the grandparents.
Yeah, I do. I must admit, I do miss the grandparents every now and again. Every now and again, I do. So it's great. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. Where did it all start for you? University, school? What did you do at uni?
So uni, I did business studies in Sheffield, which was absolutely brilliant. I didn't actually know that I wanted to do business studies. I was sort of forced into it by my mum because I was one of those kids who didn't really know what they wanted to do, just had lots of different interests and no real passionate, as I suppose lots of kids are at the moment. And my daughter's 18 and she's going through the same thing, but she actually really knows what she wants to do. So I went into business studies at university and I absolutely loved it. I actually really enjoyed the trying to understand how a business operates. And when I left university, I went for some different graduate programs. So I actually joined Yorkshire Bank on their graduate sales program. And I did a year and a half there. And after a year and a half, I was due for my next promotion. And I discovered that I had to wait till 3 other people had got their promotions for me to get that. And at that point, I thought, no, this isn't for me. I love change. I love quite a fast-paced environment, and I discovered that sort of retail banking in particular just didn't have that fast-paced environment. It was quite sedentary. I was responsible for business banking, so I spoke to quite a lot of small businesses, and I loved the fact that I was helping people sort of shape their strategy, making them as successful as they could be. So I sort of took a step back and decided that I wanted to go into a different role, and it was actually my dad was in sales, and he persuaded me that it'd be a great place to go. I was quite reticent at first because of the sales is seen as male orientated, fierce, dogged, and I wasn't sure whether the way that I operate would be able to fit into that environment. But I eventually went for it and actually became a sales graduate in what was Digital Equipment Corporation. I've done sales now for 20 plus years. So started as an account manager, became an account director. In that time, I sort of worked for 3 different organizations. So I worked for Digital Equipment Corporation, which were then took over by Compaq, which were then took over by HP. And quite interesting, the 3 cultures in those organizations were so different. HP and Digital were quite similar. Compaq was a completely different culture. And trying to actually integrate those organizations, you've probably seen the press about it sort of 10, 15 years ago, where it didn't necessarily go to plan from a HP perspective as they thought it was. And that was really because of the cultures in there.
Downplaying that, it didn't go to plan. That's right. It definitely did go to plan. Before we get there, I want to quickly jump back because I think, and it's refreshing to hear because I was exactly the same. I think there's pressure on people, and there's pressure on kids. Oh, it feels like there's pressure on kids. Maybe there's not, but it feels like there's pressure on kids to have it sorted by the time they're 18. Now, we talk a lot about purpose and vision and all of these things today, like, which we didn't. We just went to school and then we did our exams and then we kind of had to figure out what we wanted to do. And my dad was like, I had a trade. You should have a trade. But, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I just got a job. You went to Sheffield and kind of find yourself in that business studies world and then really unlocked from there what what it was that you wanted to do or were meant to do.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there is a real pressure. So I've got two teenage daughters, and the pressure for them is, what do you want to do? Map your whole life out from now. And I don't think we had that pressure when we were younger. It was very much go to university, have a good time, and then try and work out where you go from there. And things like, we talk quite a lot around values, which actually I've done quite a lot of work on in the last 2 or 3 years, but when I was 20, I really didn't know what my values were. And if someone asked me, I'd be like, well, I just want to earn, shed loads of money and have a good time and travel. That probably wouldn't be in mind. But this is what I want, rather than actually look at, you know, trust, customer success, being the best, whatever those values are. And I think they're important, but I think children should be allowed to be children, and they should just grow up and get the passion. It's all about the passion, isn't it? That's what I try. When I mentor people, I actually say, what is it that you're passionate about? What is it that excites you? And that's what you should aim to be.
Yeah. And you know, my kids are 14 and 12, and you know, what we want them to do is try lots of different things. We want them to take action. You know, my daughter particularly wants to find something. She's like, oh, I thought I wanted to be this and I wanted to be this. And it's like, you've got plenty of time to figure it out. You know, and I didn't do particularly well at school, so I didn't go. I remember dad saying, right, well, you can't go to university now, so you better get a job. And it was literally, that was the conversation. It's like, so what do you want to do? I was like, I don't know. Do something that could buy records. Yeah. I think you're right. I think there's a lot that we can do to inform and help and guide, but ultimately they're just human beings like the rest of us. They have to make their own mistakes. That's how they'll learn. And then eventually, like you did with sales, and it was interesting that your dad was in sales, but obviously he wasn't there behind you from day one pushing you. He kind of just waited for you to find that yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did. And I'd actually done an internship. So I'd done in the summer of one university, I'd gone into his sales environment and was a PA for another person in this company. So I did that for 6 weeks. And after that, I was like, actually, I think I'd enjoy that. But my concern was I wasn't sure around. It is mainly, and to be fair, to this day, it still is. And we are desperately trying to change that. And there's lots of movement, and there's so many changes since when I started sales 20 years ago. But it was a male environment. It was quite fierce, quite dogged. And the culture was very much it was a boys club. It was. And that was, I think, the thing that was concerning me about how do I join that organisation, make a difference and make sure I'm successful? And more importantly, will I enjoy it? Because to me, you're working, especially in a sales environment, you do work 10, 12 hour days. You have to work hard. So if you're spending that much time in that environment, you need to make sure that you're enjoying it.
Resilience is key, and everything used to be done on the golf course. You know, I remember in my first senior management role, I used to get wined and dined and golf courses and all of these things, and no females in sight. And I remember saying to a sales guy once, I was like, where's all the women on your team? Is like, oh, it's not the kind of environment for them. They never got a bit of work from me. I'm like, wait, what? And I think it's done much to change its image, Claire. I think I still feel there's some way to go.
I do. I think there's some way to go. But I actually think that the sort of the characteristics and the way that female salespeople sell is actually what customers want, because we are generally more empathetic. We are better at listening. We actually put the customers at the heart of everything we do. And that's actually the way that sales is going. And it's a natural phenomenon for a female to do that. So a lot of the best salespeople I've seen are actually females. And there are quite a lot of us around. So what tends to happen is you tend to get quite a lot at the account management, so the entry level. That's when you start to get, and then as you progress into the sales leadership, that's when they tend to not necessarily follow. Salesforce is probably a different phenomenon, because in actual fact, the Salesforce leadership, it's probably a 50-50, I think, in the UK. And it is starting to get that in quite a lot of areas. So progress has been huge. And I actually think the way that female salespeople, if they're allowed to be themselves, which is absolutely key, as long as you're going in and being yourself rather than trying to follow the male characteristics and be that aggressive. It's quite funny, I can be quite assertive. So I'm very, very competitive, and I can be quite assertive, and I say what I think. That's sort of a northern thing as well. And that to me is how I am. And I used to get told that I was being aggressive. And I was like, I'm saying exactly the same as what a male's saying. It's just that I'm a female. So he's being assertive and leading, and I'm being aggressive. And it's trying to change those different scenarios. And also it's the confidence, I think, of those female salespeople. It's how do you actually build that self-belief and that confidence? Because naturally, as a female sales leader in an environment where there aren't that many, you do tend to, that self-belief has to be there in order to progress. And it's the support network. I've got a really good support network of other female leaders that I've actually grown up with. So that, you know, we grew up from a digital HP perspective. There were sort of 8-10 of us that grew up together. And that support network has been brilliant to answer those questions that you get on, and that mum guilt that you get, that just, you know, you say, you know, am I doing the right thing? Just to have somebody to say, yeah, you're absolutely doing the right thing, is quite key.
That's so fantastic. And I couldn't agree more with regards to the feminine characteristics. You know, I do a lot of work with engineering companies, and I talk a lot about this. They're 80-90% male, and they're doing their best to open up graduate programs to encourage more female leaders, but they fundamentally need to change their cultures. And I talk a lot about the feminine characteristics that males need to display, the words that they use, the body language, the jokes that they tell, all of these kind of things that need to change in order to open the doors to more diversity. It's not just a numbers game. It's about you and how you interact and how you welcome other human beings. So it's great to hear you. It's great to hear you say that. I remember I had an argument with a guy once who called a woman bossy. Exactly the same thing that you said about assertiveness. Exactly the same. As like, if a man said that, you would say, that's what we need, more of that. And yet when a female says it, it's about being bossy. I want to jump back very quickly to the merger of the three cultures, because that did make the news way back when in the UK, and it didn't go to plan. Was it that the values were misaligned? Were the cultures that different, Claire? You know, kind of what was your sense when you were in amongst it?
It was two completely different cultures, and it was two different ways of looking at how to be successful. Compaq was very much a hard-nosed, driven, dogged sell, sell, sell. And it was, you know, if you're not going to hit your target, then there's an issue and you will be performance managed. So it was quite a high stress environment, and it didn't really have that business understanding, that business. And that, I think that grew up from where Compaq came from. It was selling personal computers, and then moving into the enterprise and selling to business is a different way of selling. And Compaq was very much sell, sell, sell. And it had some great behaviours in the way that it operated. The operational excellence was there. HP was quite similar to digital, actually, and that was very much putting the customer at the heart of everything you do, trying to understand, looking at long-term success. So in sales, there's always this issue with short-term, quarterly, monthly targets versus long-term customer success, and doing the right thing for the customer, and knowing that if you do the right thing now, in 6 or 12 or a year's time, that customer will be with you and continuing to spend. And I think the philosophy was completely different. Compaq was very much short-term and get your numbers in for that month, that quarter. And HP, whilst it was interested in those numbers, tended to take that long-term approach. And it was just two completely different personalities. So Compaq was that aggressive sales personality. HP was a bit more of a laid-back, interested in customer, and more of those female traits were actually in HP than they were in Compaq, definitely.
And so from there, you moved to Dell. And were there some learnings you took about how to create great culture, or maybe even how not to do things, into the new role that helped you build your next team?
Absolutely. To me, I think the thing that was missing when the HP Compaq merger happened, the key issue was that vision and that purpose. We mentioned vision and purpose before. You know, what are we aiming for? What are we trying to do? And because it had become such a big monolithic organization, the vision and purpose wasn't there. It didn't really work across the whole organization. So there was a lot of internal fighting. There was an internal focus rather than an external focus. And I think when an organization starts focusing purely internally, that's when you have the issues, because you're actually forgetting the customer, which is, you know, the sort of the most important thing around what we do. So when I went to Dell, the first thing that I did, and to be honest, it's what I do whenever I create any team, is try and make sure that everybody has that purpose and that vision at front and center. Everybody's bought into that, and everybody's got the same sort of beliefs and attitudes and values. So it's really important that you have a diverse workforce, but it's really important that everybody actually believes in that vision and has similar values that they can drive through.
And is that deliberate activity that you undertake? Because, you know, often I see people thinking that this will happen organically. And yet when I speak to people on the podcast and clients that I end up working with, they always take deliberate action. Is that the same for you, Claire?
Yeah, absolutely. It has to be deliberate. I don't think you can just assume, because of how you operate and what you do and how everybody operates, that it will happen. You have to take a deliberate. So I tend to, that vision session, I tend to have in my mind what I want the vision to be, but I always do a session with my team where we discuss that. Anytime I create a new team, I also make sure we spend a lot of time really getting to know each other. So we do a lot around strengths finder. So whether it be MBTI, whether it be insights, colours, whether it be, you know, Marcus's strengths. There's so many different programs, but I always choose one of those. And to be fair, every organization is slightly different depending on which one you do. But I spend a lot of time actually getting to know what those strengths are and how each individual operates from a team perspective, from my immediate team. And then it's actually setting those values. And when I was at Experian, so I moved to Experian 3 years ago, when I was at Experian, I spent quite a lot of time building those values within my team. So I had a team of 150. And one of the things we did, for example, is we did an away day where we just talked about trust, and we did various different activities throughout the day. A lot of speeches, a lot of conversations about what trust means and how you build that both internally and externally. Because that to me is one of the key areas, and it was one of my key focus areas. And I noticed that quite a lot of people didn't understand what I meant when I talked about trust and what that meant to them and how they should act. So I spent a whole day. We actually operated. We went away in the afternoon. We did a bit of a Bear Grylls afternoon where we did a lot of activities based around trust. But the whole morning was really talking and interacting and making sure everybody was on point with what I meant by trust and what I wanted it to mean and what they therefore needed it to mean, so that we built that mutual agreement.
I love the fact that you spent a day just talking about trust. Some people would be horrified at that. Oh, we're too busy. Oh, we haven't got time. Or else they turn it into some kind of senior management only offsite, which would achieve nothing. And yet there you go, spend a whole day just talking about trust, because most people are like, oh, well, trust is earned, trust is earned. Actually, when you spend a day talking about trust, you can then assume it moving forward and expect the best of each other, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the reasons why we did it. We actually did it. I'd done a big reorganization and teams had merged. So it was actually trying to form that team as quickly as possible and create that trust, because the only way that we would have been successful was to actually have that trust built across the different teams as they came together. To me, the only way a team can be successful in sales, it's classed as a very individual exercise. And the way I tend to operate is, yes, you have an individual target, but the only way that you can hit that individual target is if we operate as a team and we all look after each other and work together really well. And that's why I think I've probably been successful, is building that team culture so that everybody looks after everybody and everybody hits that target. You all assume that everybody is going to hit that target, and you always have those A players, but those A players, part of their role is to actually coach and make sure that they're bringing along everybody else. And that culture is critical in a sales environment if you're going to be continually successful.
So you've got leaders who then create more leaders, which then creates that kind of cycle of always make sure there are good people coming through the system who uphold the values that you have and ensure that the culture keeps evolving in the right way. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you've been at Salesforce now for almost 6 months, and Salesforce, famously one of the, you know, kind of always, and someone who reads all of the research here, always like one or two as one of the best cultures in the world. So what have you learned in the 6 months that you've been there? And now we've had the COVID crisis, so we're recording this in May. So we're kind of still in isolation. Some people are coming out. So I imagine everything's been virtual for you pretty much for the last 6 months.
It has, pretty. So I joined in the January. I spent about 6 to 8 weeks getting to know the team, spent a lot of time in our London office, and then obviously COVID hit and I've been from home ever since. But the way that Salesforce has handled it probably epitomizes everything that Salesforce is, and I'm absolutely loving it. I'm actually in awe of how they operate, because they do. People talk about the culture. Salesforce, I don't know if you've read any of the literature, talk about Ohana, which is all about the community, and they actually live by it and they mean it, and it's just been absolutely brilliant. So yeah, I mentioned about the fact that I want to create these different sales training, etc. And normally when I go to organizations, that training isn't there. And I do quite a lot around mindset and about resilience and grit and building those characteristics in my salespeople. And I normally have to create that. I normally have to go externally and create that. When I got to Salesforce, all that material is there. They've sort of, all the things that aren't normally considered are actually pretty much ingrained in what everybody does at Salesforce. So that culture is real. And it's been absolutely amazing. The way that they've treated their employees and they've put their employees and their customers first has just been astounding to me. It's been brilliant to watch.
That's incredible. And so Ohana centers around, from memory, centers around the four Salesforce values of trust, growth, innovation, equality. Is that right?
Trust, customer success. Oh, yeah, it's customer success.
Yes, my bad. They, exactly as you say, is they put so much time, effort, thought into making sure there's this continual, almost production line, even though that's probably the wrong phrase, of personal development for people. I remember speaking to a senior manager from Salesforce in Sydney in February, and she just said, whatever I want to do, I can get support and money to do it, which I think is fabulous.
They give you a reimbursement, education reimbursement every year. No matter where you are in the organization, you get this value of money. It's different across the globe, that you use to actually help your personal development. And that's all about consistent personal development. And you can spend that on anything that will help you. So it's up to you what you spend it on. You have to go and find that course. You have to go and find the university degree, etc., that you want to do. And then you go do that course and they reimburse you for that, which I've not seen really in many other organizations. But it's, and when I have seen it, it's not really been put as number one priority. Whereas at Salesforce, it's very much, what are you doing with your education reimbursement? What are you doing from a personal development perspective? Which I love, because that passion for me at the moment, I've sort of progressed through sales leadership. It's that mentoring and coaching and actually seeing salespeople progress. So that's key to me, is the personal development and actually making sure that everybody else is taking advantage and being the best that they can be.
That's awesome, Claire. And, you know, just, you know, listening to your career, listening to the experience that you've got, you would make a fabulous mentor. I mean, some of the things that you've shared are still some of the things that people don't do from a culture perspective, which are now part of, I guess, your repertoire, and the way that you elevate others is just fabulous. And I want to say a huge, huge thank you for joining us on the Culture Makers podcast today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks so much for listening to today's podcast. Please remember to subscribe or share the link on your social media platform of choice, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you hang out. You can also forward it onto your colleagues and friends and help them to inspire and motivate others too. Better still, why not keep the conversation going and join our community of culture makers from around the world who share information on the things that have worked and haven't worked. You can do that at www.culturefixcommunity.com. And remember, sharing is caring. See you next time.